Welcome to A Writer in Italy, the podcast. I am your host, Michelle Johnston, and this is a little share in the world of travel, books, art, and lifestyle. I live in Australia, yet have long had an attraction to the Mediterranean countries for as long as I can remember. This inspiration has fueled my creative life and given me incredible joy over the years as an artist and a writer. And that is why I have created these shares on journeys that have been made, books that I have loved, and cooking adventures inspired by wonderful food writers. You can find all show notes at michellejohnston.life and follow me on Instagram at A Writer in Italy, where you can find all of the meanderings and, indeed, the lure of Italy as the ultimate muse. Thank you for joining me. I love having you here for the journey of Muse Italia. Welcome. Tessa Quiros is here today. Her most recent book is Now and Then, a collection of recipes for always. Now and Then is a publication of Murdoch Books, and I must say the team there have given us another stunning book to hold and savour and cook from. This is Tessa's 11th cookbook. This is a beautiful conversation about Tessa's writing, her creative life, food and styling, the travels, family life, and how she sees the world and the things that inspire. Make yourself a pot of tea and relax into this share. Tessa was at home in Tuscany when we spoke about Now and Then and what inspired this cookbook. You can find Tessa on Instagram at Tessa Quiros. Her website is tessaquiros.com. Her book, Now and Then, is everywhere you love to source your books from. And thank you, Tessa, so much for this bountiful and generous conversation. Enjoy. I think a lot of people would agree with me that a cookbook that is part memoir and part cookbook is the most perfect kind of book. You write, quote, "I travel and collect things that I love. Memories, tastes, colors, and stories. I bring them home and make the beautiful meals I had so we can live them all over again." Welcome, Tessa Quiros. One thing I love,
thank you.
You're welcome. One thing I love about your book are the colours of your kitchen, all of the objects on display, the collections of tins and jars, baskets and plates, the everyday inspirations. Here are the reminiscences and flavours you have encountered on your journeys. How would you describe your most recent collection of recipes and stories in Now and Then?
Well, I would describe it as something that's going back to the past and collecting things that I've loved together, bringing them up to date with the things that I eat nowadays, these days. Well, nowadays is one of the chapters in the book, which is quite a hefty chapter, all vegetables, but I'm not a vegetarian. I think that we cannot deny that, you know, we need to take a look at the way we've been eating and make a few shifts and changes. And then there's everybody with, you know, certain eating preferences or allowances lately. So you need to be ready to take all of these into consideration. So I would say that is my biggest chapter. But it's not only what I eat, because I like to go back and, you know, bring something in from a trip. I go Greece, Italy, Thailand, where I spend a lot of time. Things from my past travels that I collect. So I would say that this book is a collection of the way that I eat these days, which I think is fair to say many people eat in this way. It's the way that I want to present my food to the people that I love, to my family. You know, I could imagine myself maybe in 10 years' time sitting somewhere at my table with all my tablecloths and things that I have collected, and this is the way that I would eat.
That sounds really beautiful.
So there's a little bit of everything, I would say. You know, I would not say it's just this or just that. It is, I really think there's something for everybody in this book.
There is. It's a beautiful collection. There is so much colour and joy threaded through your book, with jewels and moments and tastes of the places you have visited over many years. What has place and travel given you as a writer and a collector of recipes?
Well, travel, I think, is the thing that really inspires me most. Even today, there's so many places, there's so many things to do. It's the thing that inspires me so much. You know, after school, I knew that I wanted to travel always, and that's the first thing I set off to do. And at the same time, I was traveling, doing a degree in anthropology and sociology, and those are the things that interest me. So the thing about travel is, for me, the people behind it and what the people have made of their nation, how they've made their cultures. The stories are the things that hold it together for me. The stories, the people, the why, the how they do things, you know, and it's the people that link it all together, because it's the people that make the fabrics that I find so inspiring from a place. And for me, there's always a story behind it. Person, the people is what it's about.
Yeah, that is a beautiful feeling and thing to bring back with you. Just those memories and those connections and the recipes that you might have discussed while you were there.
When I think about Mexico now, I think about Rosa in the kitchen, and that was just like such a surprise. I got to Mexico, wasn't expecting Rosa, a cook, to be living in this family that I moved in with to study Spanish, and she was just the absolute highlight for me. So when I think about Mexico now, I think about Rosa, I think about her hibiscus water that she made and pressing out her tortillas every day for the family meal. And that's, you know, that just holds it together so strongly for me.
Yeah. Isn't it beautiful when you see people so dedicated to what they put on the table? I find that so beautiful.
Absolutely. I think that anybody doing what they love and doing it well is, for me, such an inspiration. So, you know, cooking or any kind of artistry that somebody does, whether, you know, whatever it is, when they bring themselves to it, their integrity, for me, is just so inspiring.
Absolutely. Me too. And it gives me a jolt of knowing that that's the right thing to do and that's really important, even if it is a simple thing, like making, like, just say a focaccia. It doesn't matter what it is. It just brings all the parts that are good in life together.
You know, I tell my kids, my girls, I say to them, you know, if you're going to do something, you may as well just do it well. But it's on any level. If somebody's fixing a computer, you know, and they're doing it and they're loving it and they're doing it with 100% of them, I really enjoy watching that. Or fixing a car or something that I have nothing, like a mechanic fixing a car and doing that. I admire that. I can't do it. But I admire somebody who's putting themselves completely into something.
Yeah.
There's so much to do, you know, if you think about it. There's so much. It's endless.
It is. Indeed. And that creativity. Does creativity play a role, a big role in your life, do you think?
Yes, totally. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think that's what I do. I create and I love, you know, just building something up. Building it up to how I want it to be. Like if you'd make a book, you know, a book could be anything. It could be just recipe photo. And that'll be great. I think everybody should put what they want to in a book. If you can, you should put yourself in it, build it up, create it. So I love creating the photographs with my team. I love creating the recipe and a little bit of a story, words. It's amazing how just creating, you know, you've got one word, you build up a sentence with the rest of the words, and amazing how different your sentence will be depending on which words you use or how you put them in. And the same thing with colour. You can make something so beautiful by just one splash of colour in it. And for me, I think it is about the creating more than, say, like scientific, although scientifically is also creating. But for me, it's definitely the creativity that I always look for and I always feel that I need to express or make something.
I do too.
Think creativity is also such a different term for so many different people, isn't it?
It really is. But it's like this inner spring or something that just kind of leads you from one thing to another. And like even the way you might buy a tablecloth, but you saw all those tablecloths in Provence and the colours of that place and how it all comes together in one piece of fabric, and then you put that on your table and those memories, and that might inspire you to cook something from those moments or whatever happens along the way. But it's just a beautiful thing, because one thing leads to another all of the time, and then you have a beautiful book that you've created. So,
and I think that, you know, you mentioned nature or spring or something, did you? But I think that, you know, just watching nature and spring unfolding and everything like that is just such an inspiration. It's all there, colors, things just happen, and it's an instinctual kind of process that you don't have to, you know, dig too deep.
And I think they're the things, like when you see nature's bounty, for instance, that it's springtime or it's autumn, and then you take that home and then that becomes something that day. But you didn't know that you were going to make it, you know, that you just found it at the market and the colors inspired you. So there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, just the way the spring is and the way that a flower blossoms, that nature needs certain things like sunshine and water and a few vitamins, let's say a few elements. And I think that human beings are the same. We all need something, you know, like, so inspiration, call it whatever you want. But we all need a little bit of inspiration and our nourishment in order to flourish. And I think everybody knows what those are for them. You know, you get, you fill yourself with a little bit of that, and you will naturally flourish and blossom. Mine is travel and color and people. You know, I need that inspiration. Nature, the sea, I love the sea. So when we've got our balance of those kind of things, you know, I believe that people are the same. They give out their blossoms in a natural way.
Yeah, they do. I loved your chapter on the roses at the end of your book, actually. It's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, that's fun, isn't it? Just fun, because it's like, you know, you can put whatever you want in a book. You know, you can give it whatever you want to give, but really it's just, you know, I think that's fun.
It is, and it's the touch of nature that we're talking about, just having that inspiration from a summer rose and just turning that into a cup of tea.
We need a little bit of that lightness, the light, the energy of just having a little bit of whimsy and fun. And, I mean, roses, rose water in food is something that I've grown up with from my Cypriot grandfather turning it into his rice pudding and rice flour dessert kind of thing. It was always cinnamon and rose water. And, you know, it's a beautiful part of cooking.
And part of your lineage as well.
Yeah, yeah. Some people are like, oh, no, it's too strong, it's perfume. I love it. It's, again, just the senses, isn't it? Smell and touch. And I'm very much an aesthetic. I relate to my world through aesthetics. Some people, I think, relate through numbers or through, you know, everyone has their own way of relating. Mine is aesthetic for sure. And I make sense of my world aesthetically. So it's colors, it's a tone of a piece of wood that I enjoy, or I remember things in terms of colors and details.
Oh, likewise. I am a little bit the same. It's always the details that I take away. So when you travel, do you do a lot of writing on the go, like just taking notes, or do you just kind of hold it?
I do. I do both. I sometimes jot down some notes. I always carry a little notebook with me. I take some photos so I can remember things as they were. You know, I like to create something as it was. So it might even be on the same plate that I ate, on the same shape or a color. And, you know, I like to create things as close as possible to as I ate them, so that I remember them like that and I can make them again, as you read just now. So I have a different way of working. And then maybe, you know, if there's another moment that I feel like writing something, I'll just sit down and write it. So there's no method, really. I just go with the flow, instinct, basically. But when I do travel, I like to just observe. I think that observing is, you know, really important. So I spend some time alone and I just watch and I immerse myself into things and just observe, and then I take some notes, you know, for the things that resonate with me or the things that interested me. I mean, at the end of it, that's what people are writing about, things that interest them. So everybody's book will be different. Nobody can really, you know, feel the same thing exactly, or say the same thing, or see the same thing even. I think that that's why it's so individual and beautiful, and so many different takes on something.
Absolutely. I mean, I know a lot of people love the colors of your books and the vividness. There's a beauty in them, like a sensuality of the life and the living that you do and what you capture along the way. In fact, someone said to me today on Instagram, just the cover of your book is like inspiration enough to see that delicate flower there on a beautiful plate, on a beautiful tablecloth. And, you know, they're the things that make us feel like, even though you've done all that traveling, but they make you feel like you're at home. When you come back from your travels, how important is the part of home to you?
Home is definitely like so important. And I'm looking around me over here now and everything, all the plates and things that, you know, that I've brought back, that's what my home is now. It's a collection of everything. So essentially I'm completely eclectic in my choice. I think that, you know, people always just get what they like at the end of it, don't they? They just think, I like that plate, I'm taking it home. So to love everything all around me and to live in that way is lovely. And I think that, you know, you speak about my colors. I think everyone has their color palette. Essentially, mine is like a mix and match of things, you know. I know what kind of wood I like. I like white wood. You know the things that just say yes to you. So for me, when I'm choosing things, it's always just a yes or a no. But the same thing, you know, should this recipe go on this page? Can this recipe fit in? For me, it's a yes or a no. It's quite instant. And I think that everybody has that, you know. Do you like it or not? It's the things that we choose at the end of it, isn't it? What we keep around us, what we surround ourselves with, what we want on our table. It's just a reflection of the things that you love. You know, what you put on the table every day is what you want to be eating. And a plate that you put on is the way that you want to see it. I mean, you don't have to do that, but it's just little extra things that give me joy. I think that if we can fill our moments of the day with joy, that's just incredible. I think the happier that we feel, the more that we've got to give people. And one of the best things that people have said to me is that, you know, I've given them inspiration. And through my books, if I can do that, that is a total honor. I feel like my work is done if I've done that. And it's really beautiful. To be able to give one person inspiration, I think is incredible.
It is. There's a real overflow in that. Is there a particular place that has influenced you and your cooking and the recipes more than anything?
Well, I would say one of the places that feels very much like home to me is Greece. And I'm drawn always to, you know, Greek food, which is big plates of lentils or black-eyed beans. The moussaka, my aunt, has influenced me a lot. My grandfather from Cyprus. I love these big trays of vegetables and the generosity of olive oil and colors and everything. And I would say that has been a really big influence in my cooking. At the end of the day, I like rustic cooking. Those are the ones I'm drawn to, homely, grandmother, grandfather kind of cooking. And the people from those places have, grandfather in Cyprus has been an incredible influence on me. As well as the Finnish side, my mom has been amazing, so I have a lot of strong influence from Finland as well. I would say Italy as well. You know, I've lived here for a long time, and I think the way that they cook in Italy is just the simplicity of beautiful ingredients, which also comes from Greece. But the way that Italians have got that access to beautiful ingredients so easily at the markets, and I love the way they spread it all out between primo, secondo, contorno. It's not just all piled onto one plate. I like the simplicity. And I think that's something that I will always carry with me.
I loved your chapter dedicated to Italy. And I obviously am a little biased, but
in Italy.
Yeah, absolutely. What I would miss if I left in Italy. I adored the beauty of that sentence because I always feel that it's good to recognize that the things that you love and that make you happy. I was wondering, you talk of your early memories of meeting your husband, Giovanni, and his love of artichokes, or an obsession, you kind of suggested. What was memorable about those first meals?
Well, I had been working in London. I had been in Mexico at that time, and I had even worked in Australia. I had worked in Sydney for a little bit. And so I was quite sure at that point about what I loved about food, the way I loved to cook. I had a general good idea about it at that point. So when I met Giovanni, he was, you know, one night he said that he was going to go and, you know, get some things and arrange dinner. And he came home with an armful of artichokes and a beautiful piece of bread and cheese. And he just served everything on a white plate with this beautiful olive oil. And I just thought, wow, this is like everyday kind of thing in Italy from somebody who just went out and got like the first thing that came to his mind, what he wanted to eat. And I was really impressed. It was so it was interesting because I didn't speak Italian. He didn't speak English when we met. So it was probably, you know, looking at other little details like that, which I loved. You know, that was something that really impressed me. I've been in London and I came over here and I thought, wow, this is like he really understands something. And so our link, I think, was a lot through ingredients, through food. I was actually working at his family restaurant. So that's how we met. I was going to be here for a month studying Italian, and I said to them at the school, is there a restaurant that I could work in while I'm here so I can learn more about the Italian food? So they put me in this restaurant called L'Angolo, which belonged to Giovanni's family. So he came there every day to eat lunch. That's how we met. I still notice that about him. He still has that appreciation always. And he'll come with things which are seasonal, like now there'll be some, you know, pan cosanti or something around Siena, and which is a beautiful bread with pepper in it and walnuts and raisins. So they'll start eating that kind of thing. There's always an appreciation of it. Good wine. Giovanni comes home with, you know, a loose wine from a barrel that goes on to be a Rosso di Montalcino, and they all know about the ingredients over here. There's a general appreciation available to everybody of ingredients, of their time of year to be eaten. And those were the things that I really appreciated, you know, when I met Giovanni.
Such simple pleasures.
And exciting food, you know. In my first book, 12, there's a risotto di fragole, a risotto with strawberries, which I learned from Giovanni's family. this is funny.
I love your book, 12.
No. Alexa, stop.
Oh, that's Alexa. That's what that was. I'm like, that's something
else. No, it's so funny because she just said, would you like a recipe for risotto or something? That's so funny. Say, like, you know, what I would miss if I left Italy. I think that's quite a strong sentence, and I think that I'm glad that you relate to that because it is literally, like, what are the things that you would actually miss if you left a place? What would you miss if you left Australia? I asked some people about it the other day who came to an event near Brighton where we were, and they said, you know, from England they would miss cheddar. People relate to their places. People have got their pillars of familiarity and things which make you happy in a place. They would miss cheddar. They would miss, you know, certain things. A lot of people would miss their own bread there from that they know that they can get. And it's things that sometimes we take for granted, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the joy of travel because it wakes you up to that.
And one of the things I love when I travel is just going like straight to a supermarket of a place, and I can spend ages in there just to see a regular supermarket. What do they have? I love to see how new things are packaged and the general things which people have in their day-to-day lives.
Do you find yourself like throwing too many things in the trolley then? Because that's what always happens to me when I travel. Like I just can't help it. I'm like, I have to try this and that. And it gets ridiculous.
I do love to try. Yeah. I do. I think that, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing. I like to just go there first and see what, you know, what they're doing and all that. And often just like a little, even a small taste of something. But isn't it so interesting to see even just the tins and the way things are presented.
Absolutely.
And what people are actually getting every day in their everyday lives. I find that fascinating.
It says so much.
Totally. A market is always, for me, a great place to start. Fresh fruit and vegetable, clothing, you know, those kind of markets, open-air markets, are, for me, the best.
They are a portal into the culture, I think.
And I think that in Italy, if somebody comes, you know, in when is it April or something, and they see all the artichokes, and they'll think, wow, Italy always has artichokes. But a couple of months later, there's not one. So I always think that when you write about a place, you need to, you know, have like a 12-month kind of view of it almost. So different.
Yes, very different to here where right now there's beautiful asparagus available. 3 months ago, it was there, but it was from Mexico. And that's very common for our world here in Australia and our supermarkets. And it's the thing that inspires me about French culture and Italian and Spanish and whatnot, that the seasons apply. Like the seasons are an anchor for the food on the table. And
yes, it's totally. Like you won't find asparagus, at least here where I live, when it's not in season. You can get it frozen and that's it. You know, so sometimes it's like if you're trying to do a photo shoot or something, it can be tricky. I mean, there are definitely places that you can get them, but I think that you have to like really search. I don't think there's many places near me. Not even the market in Florence, I think I can get asparagus when it's not in season.
And then it becomes a big mission. Do you find with your preparing your books, is it something you'll do over quite a long period, or do you just...
Yes, because of the seasonal availability. So I think that maybe in a big city like London, it wouldn't be a problem because you can get them. But I know that if I'm doing figs or something, you know, what am I going to do if it's January or February here? So we'll organize a shoot like across a couple of seasons at least. If we're shooting something in a different country, then you need to know what you need to photograph in that time that is not available in your home country or where the next shoot will be. So there's a lot of thought that goes into that kind of thing. You know, fresh flowers even, if you want flowers in your props and you need magnolias or something, these things need to be taken into consideration.
Do you know what you want in your pictures or in the images beforehand, or does it kind of come together at that minute?
It kind of comes together at that minute, although there is a little bit of planning, you know, for things like if we do need roses or something like that, then that needs to be organized and roughly planned. And often I like to, working with my stylist books is amazing, and he's been a friend of mine since birth. And so he knows, and he'll say to me, like, so what do you want to show in this picture? Tell me about this meal. Tell me about this. So, you know, we work together on that, and he's incredible. So there is a little bit of planning, but not much. So, because I know him for so long and so well, and he's such a friend of mine, such a good friend, you know, I think that maybe if I was working with somebody for the first time, there would need to be a bit more planning. So a lot of ours is spontaneous, yes.
I wondered because I get such an authenticity from your books in particular, and I know it's a challenge because you're on a schedule and there's a lot of work that goes into it. So I was just curious from a writing and collaborating perspective, the person that you just spoke about, is that your photographer or is that a different person, your food stylist?
No, it's the stylist. He's the stylist that sets up the photographs. And there's also another very special person on my books who I've always worked with, another friend of mine, and she is the creative director, which she sets it up with the style and she does the fonts, she does all the layouts, and she is incredible.
Your books?
She's a friend of mine as well, and she's not a book designer, but she does my books and she is just incredible.
That's incredible because your books, they're all designed so beautifully, and it's extraordinary to see how she's leaped from culture to culture, like the Provence to Pondicherry, and then your one in Portugal.
Oh, that's the only book that she didn't do of mine. She didn't do Provence to Pondicherry. Oh, and I work with an incredible designer, an Australian woman on that one. But my friend Lisa has done all my other books, and it's her design, her collages. You know, she brings it all together. She sets the scene. She sets the tone. There's a lot of work and a lot of layers that go into making a book. And then there's my publisher, Murdoch, who is the editor layer and holding it all together, because people often just think, oh, I'm going to write a book. It's not an easy thing to do, and you need the professionals and you need the people not only to make your book but also to take it out there to print and for publicity, because you can have a book, but if it's not going to get out there to the audience, then what have you got, you know?
I know what you're saying. It's a lot of collaboration together, and I was curious because I have most of your books. I don't know that I have the Greek one. So I've seen all of the beautiful images and they're all so evocative. And I was wondering, have you also had the same photographer for your work? Is it Manos?
Yes. I've had the same photographer, Manos, on all of my books. And he's Greek as well. And, it's been the same photographer all the way through and the same style at least. Lisa, my artist, on all but one.
Mm.
It's a creative collaboration between the team, which I get a lot of the credit for, but there's a whole team of people behind me, supporting, getting things into place. As an author, the team are the team of people that should be able to bring your vision to light as close as possible. Then there's also the PR team, like Gemma, who put us together. And there's so many different layers of it all that it's actually incredible. Just even to get one book published is a total honour.
Oh, indeed. It's quite a team effort. And I think anyone who really looks at a book and really loves books, they kind of can feel that there's all these layers. And how long did this book take to write for you?
I would say realistically 2 years, but as you can see, a lot of the recipes have been there for a lot longer than that, and a lot of them have been in preparation for longer than that. But I would say realistically, a book like that would take 2 years to do, between the photos and then there's all the colour separating and the sending and the trying, the printing, and in the meantime there's the work going through with the editor and seeing how it can fit, and maybe then you need to cut something out or add something in, and then introductions written. The writing also doesn't just happen. It's a lengthy process. The recipe testing is a long process as well. I have a recipe tester in Australia, actually, and she's become such a good friend over the years, but we work together on it, and she's testing the recipes in Australia to make sure that the recipes are sound and that they work, and, you know, that we've got a nice balance of things. So working together with somebody who's commenting on and giving their advice and their input on it is incredible for me.
Just to bounce back and forwards is probably very necessary in that process. And
totally. And I can't tell you enough of how my daughters and their boyfriends, their friends, anybody who came to the house would be tasting and saying, oh, hang on, I've got this recipe, I'm going to bring it to you next time. And then that went into the book. So my daughter Cassia became like the home economist, which, you know, on a couple of the shoots where she was actually doing the shopping and cooking it for me and helping me together with it, because there's so much to do in those crazy moments. And my daughter, my other daughter Yasmin, who was studying in Greece at the time, she helped me incredibly. We did a shoot or two in Greece. So she was helping me, you know, where we're going to do the photos, helping me with the photos, helping me source the ingredients and the products. Even with the writing, I would read it to them and they would be like, no, Mama, I think that you need to say this rather, or put this in. And feedback from people. You know, you can't just close yourself off and do it. You also want to know that you're doing a book for people. So the more feedback and input you've got from people about their reactions to it, the richer the book is going to be. And my daughters were absolutely incredible on this book, incredible. And Giovanni, as always, patience and testing some things 5 times. They would wake up and there would be like another cake left over from yesterday for breakfast. And I said, sorry, guys, you're having this cheesecake again for breakfast because I need to make it again today. I would like to taste it with a little bit less sugar. You know, sometimes we would have only cheesecake.
That's beautiful.
And sometimes it would be the same bread for 5 days and they would be freezing everything. And so the patience of the people and the energy of the people around is wonderful that I had. My daughters, their friends, the enthusiasm. Oh, and then I've got a friend of mine in Cyprus, Artemis, who I would be sending things to all the time, and she'd be like, no, no, different colour. She's amazing aesthetically, sense of style. And so there's a recipe of hers in the book, her vegetable moussaka, in the nowadays section. And the amount of enthusiasm and help, mental, physical, everything. I don't take any of that for granted.
It certainly makes for so many special touches.
My family just, you know, because you need some sustenance as you go. So my team is amazing, makes it easy and helps. And then, you know, everybody else who I ask, and do you like this, and people bringing their ideas in. At the end of the day, it's me that's there that's saying, okay, this I like, this I don't like, this is going to work. But there's a lot of input and there's a lot of enthusiasm and there's a lot of help from so many people.
Do you...
Inspiration is a big word, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's an incredible word. And to inspire, to take that in breath, to inhale, like it goes beyond the page. It does have a ripple effect, inspiration. And the words you use, like I've always really loved your words in your books. So it's fascinating to hear that you're asking for a little bit of feedback around that. Actually, I always felt that your words just flowed on the page, and
they do, and you know, they do flow on the page. And when I've got something to write, I just sit down and I write, and the pen goes. And I find that kind of writing such a pleasure to do. When you know what you've got to say, you just take a piece of paper and you write it.
I can get inspiration from reading one of your pages, even if it's just a little detail at the beginning of a chapter in any of your books.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. You're a natural storyteller for one. But there's also something else there that gets to the nub of the detail really in only a short sentence. And I've always found that beautiful from the beginning, even though I am an aesthetic person too, like the colours on the page and the images are always going to talk to me. And that's a big deal in a cookbook. I know that because sometimes people will just buy the book just to look at the images. Like they may never even cook from it.
I've heard that and I love that.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
If my writing can take somebody somewhere in an image or something, I think that's incredible to know.
Oh, it always has. It really has. And, yeah, I even went back many years ago and went looking for your book 12. I think I had borrowed it from the library in the early days. And you started off self-publishing. Is that right?
That is right. That is right. I did my first book 12 because I didn't know that I would be living here. So I collected all the recipes from my time over here and, I wasn't sure that I was going to be living here. So I wanted to keep them in a diary for myself. So I collected all the recipes that I wanted and I was fascinated by the seasons and how they really ate like that over here. So I thought, oh, let me keep it in a book for myself. I'll make a book. So I did the book and I actually wrote to 45 publishers and I said, I've done a book. And they all said no. So I had already done the book. We had done the photos. I had found my team. The first person I asked for help was Michael, my stylist. And I said, will you help me do the book? And he said, yes, of course. So he introduced me to the photographer. And then Lisa, my friend, said, I'll take the book ready for printing for you. So that was my original team. We did it all. I had it printed in Greece. I printed 1,500 copies and, you know, started selling them. And then I heard about the Frankfurt Book Fair. So I got on the train and I went with a couple of copies of the book under my arm, and it was very difficult to get into anybody over there. They were all saying, like, take a card, send us the book, make an appointment. And Murdoch were quite open and enthusiastic. They said, can you leave the book with us for half an hour and come back? And I went back, and they were, like, really, really, you know, surprised about how I had only one book. I owned the rights. I had published it. And so everything just went from there. They almost immediately took the book, said they were interested, and it was wonderful to have an interest after so long of so many no's. So I think that my message in that is if you believe in something, go with it. I'm not saying that everybody should self-publish their book because it can be a long, expensive, and difficult journey, although these days I think it's probably a lot easier. But I just say follow your path. And if you believe in something, go with it.
I agree with you entirely. I think that thing that you connect with, other people do too. And that's a profound thing to do, to turn up at the Frankfurt Book Fair. It's a real...
Yeah, I think I didn't think about it. I've got quite a spontaneous streak in me, instinctive.
Your yes and your no.
And, and I don't know, if I did it all again, would I do it in that way? I don't know. I just did it. It felt like the right thing for me to do at the time. I believed in it.
I love listening to people when they tell stories about how they followed their instincts. And even though it probably seemed a little crazy, or it might seem a little like a big thing to do now, but at the time it was right, and it was the thing that you had in your mind to do, and it worked really well. And Murdoch is a big publishing house, so they would be discriminating, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it was. I mean, for me it was a just beautiful chance, just somebody saying yes.
Yes. And did they at the time then reprint it exactly as you had done it, or was there certain things that you changed around for their publication?
No, they did it with just a different cover. My original cover was a black and white cover, and they did it with a different cover.
Oh, there
Everything
you go.
Else was the same. Mm. And then immediately from then on, almost immediately, we signed the contract for Falling Cloudberries.
And that is a beautiful book. I mean, that book has been inspiring for many, many food writers as well. And it's a beautiful collection.
I've heard some wonderful stories about that. I think that a lot of people related to it and a lot of people loved it. It was unique, they said.
Yeah, and the colours and your stories once again. Wow. And did that come to you fast, that book? Did you know what you wanted?
I think so. I think it was just a natural book, the one that I had in me, with all the recipes from my family. And it was just a really natural book because it was all my places.
Over the years since Falling Cloudberries and Apples for Jam and all these books, did you feel like you still had more that you wanted to explore and write?
Yes, I did. And for me, the travel aspect is like endless, because it's going to a new place and getting a new bit of inspiration and, like you said before, inspire, breathing it in, sending it all the way through you and then just breathing it out again. So anything that gives you inspiration, you need the time to collect it and then you can give it out again.
Yeah.
And I think that if you like something, the chances are that other people will too.
I hold on to that as well. It's a really big thing that, although a lot of us doubt that, but it's been proven again and again that...
And again. I think that people should believe that about themselves. They should believe that if they like something, there's a really big chance that other people will like it too. And especially if you just, tighten it up, neaten it up, splash a little colour on it, and sit out there and believe in it.
Own it.
And, get a great team of people to work with. Get the best kind of professionals around you.
I love that message.
You don't have to do it all on your own.
That's a profound message, actually, because publishing a book, for instance, or writing a book, like you said, it's a big task. And there's so many elements. So taking that pressure off yourself and having the input. And I didn't realize that you had so much input. I mean, I'm not surprised in the sense of, because your books are actually quite large books as well. And there's many pages. I had a little curiosity, actually. I noticed that you mentioned a love of discovering Ayurveda and how your palate has kind of changed and evolved and gone in a different direction.
Yes.
What do you really enjoy at the moment in terms of, if you're just cooking something for yourself, what would you be preparing?
Last night, for example, I made the mung bean bowl for my family. And I just feel really good when I make a dish like that. It's not like profoundly overspiced, but you don't have to overdo it on the spices. People can also add a little bit more if they want. So we made that mung bean bowl, just really a simple bowl with rice and the mung beans, and I made some potatoes with fennel on the side of it and some green beans. And I really feel good when I eat like that. We've been making our own kefir. So in the morning, I'll have some, you know, kefir. And then a bit of a mix of everything. So those are the kind of things that I feel like I'm going more towards these days.
A bit of a light touch.
Balancing and yeah, that kind of Ayurvedic. I'm interested in it, so I'm exploring it.
Yeah, I've followed on and off over the years the Vedic medicine food, and I drink a tea that utilizes the elements of Ayurveda. So I really love that too. And you're right, like if it feels good and you feel energized and light and happy, that there's something in that. Yeah.
Definitely something in that. It's a holistic kind of situation. So I will wake up and I will do a little bit of yoga, some salutations, a bit of breathing. Following things like they'll say, you know, eat food that has got life in it. So don't eat an apple that looks like this, you know, you need to clear out the fridge and eat all these things, which is like a wrinkly apple. Food has got life and should give you life and energy. So eat good food, fresh food. Don't eat like two-day-old food from the fridge from ingredients that look like they need to be thrown out. So there's also little messages like that in Ayurveda, which is, you know, if you're feeling a little bit like flat, there's, you know, it's very detailed. Maybe you need an extra spice depending on your constitution and exactly what's happening. So it's a very personal, individual, but very holistic. It's things like, you know, advice from Ayurvedic is go out and walk in the countryside, see nature for 40 minutes every day. Me personally, this is what I am doing at the moment. And I feel like I'm getting a great benefit from it. Small little observations, not necessarily directly linked to your plate, but it's things like, you know, using ghee. I love it. I love ghee. And I've just been having it on my breakfast porridge every day. Ghee with like a teaspoon of ghee on my oatmeal with a tablespoon of a beautiful maple syrup. I'm appreciating the small details and flavors of things which take things to a different level without much effort.
And
if they say ghee is good for you, it lubricates your joints, it's good for your joints, it's good for your digestive fire. I'm going with that at the moment. A plate of vegetables for me has always been like wonderful. But it's nice to know that, you know, the mung beans that are fairly easy to digest and earthy and grounding, and I'm interested in this.
And I think that's the beauty of your book, actually, that you've got all these different elements that flow through the pages, but it's not, you're not just holding on to one thing.
No, I'm an eclectic, and it's always going to be a patchwork of things for me. And there's also always other people around, and somebody might have a craving for chocolate in that moment. You know, you need to be ready and well armed with everything.
That is a beautiful table to yes. Have a bit of.
And sometimes, you know, you don't have to be under pressure and every day have this table laden with goodies. Sometimes a bit simple, sometimes a bit more decorated and ornate. Yeah. I think we should lift the pressure off ourselves, you know. Everybody has something different to do every day. Some people have got young kids, so they've got to get food out quickly. And some people live really far out and they can't get ingredients. So you cannot be pressurized if you cannot find fennel pollen or something. And I always say, or a certain type of chili for the Mexican chapter, I say, improvise. And give it away with a few extra words. Add a couple of colorful adjectives to your table and that makes people happy, like, wow. It's not even always difficult because everybody has a different need when they're doing a book. Not everybody wants to be so involved in everything. Somebody might just say, I've got the words. I'm giving the words and the recipes and I'm giving it to somebody else to do, and they're absolutely happy to let it go and hand it over to a team of people who they don't even know to do it. Do you know what I'm saying? So everybody has a different need, a different desire, and I think that as much as you can fulfill that. Go with that. And if somebody has a very specific need that they want to be there cooking every dish and they want to be on every single photo, that's great. But not everybody has that need or desire or time.
That's really good advice. And it's nice just to
be. The silence that you take, like you really listen and keep it in, and then you think. And there's a silence and then you speak.
Thank you.
I love that.
Thank you. I just want to, like, words are very powerful, and I want that message to be authentic and right, I guess, without the pressure. And podcasting's a really fascinating experience, and there's a lot that happens on the day, and, you know, like with your books, like all those little elements that you've thought about and pondered and mused over and collected and shared and talked about with friends, and then going back to, you know, someone that you might have met a year ago and just double checking something, like, in a way, all those elements, well, not those exact elements, but there's a lot of elements that goes into having this conversation. And when I spoke to your publisher, I asked her to just send over the PDF because your book hadn't landed in Australia. I think I probably could have got it from the UK or something, but I wanted to wait. And when I sat last week and looked through it, I just got such a feeling of joy. You know, I was looking at it on my computer and going through all the pages, and life has been really intense for me lately for a myriad of reasons, but your book just brought me back to center. It made me feel all the things I love about family, and I have three daughters. My eldest is probably around the same age as your girls, and all those layers are so meaningful to me. And so when I was looking at your work, I was just like really moved by your words and the images, and I want the podcast to do that justice as well, because anyway, yesterday, this is a funny little story, but my daughter, one of my other daughters needed my car, and I'm like, you know what? I need to go buy Tessa's book, even though I could obviously just look at it on the computer and read it and even cook from it if I wanted. I just felt that I needed to have this book in my hands. Like, I really wanted to feel the pages and that beautiful yellow ribbon and have it on my shelf. So I'm like, Grace, I need the car, and I'm going to be using it, because she had something she was doing and she wasn't sure about what she was doing, and I had to drive 30 minutes. And I went and bought it from a small bookstore, and then I sat and had a coffee and I had a Portuguese tart, and I was just happy in that moment, you know. I know a lot of people, because I tend to share a lot about books on the podcast and on Instagram, we have such beautiful conversations about these books. It has given me so much joy over the last year or two to be talking with other women, and, you know, we'll talk about a book and they'll be like, oh, I love that book so much. We send photos back and forwards of each other's bookshelves. I'm like, well, what have you got on your shelf that you love? And we just have the most glorious conversations. So the book has so many meanings to me.
Amazing. Yes. And and I really agree with you about holding a book in your hand is so important to me. And just feeling it and trying to get in touch with it. And it might be something that gives you inspiration from a book, which it was just like a random little thing or whatever, you know. But I think that is important, what you've outlined over there. Probably, you know, you're talking about your daughters and everything. I can imagine that there must have been a few little bits and pieces that you related to. I'm thinking even of, you know, the snapshots of my daughters and their different, you know, right at the beginning of the book.
And you know what? I was overjoyed to see your girls now, because when I first read Apples for Jam, my eldest was around that same age. And like family has always been a real North Star for me. And I had my first daughter at 25. So that's kind of early these days. And then my husband and I have gone on to have two more daughters over about 8 years. And so we're riding this wave where one is now 23, one's 18, and one's 14. And so coming back to seeing your book and seeing your beautiful daughters, who you dedicated the book to, I found that really like full circle. And it's a joy to listen to you talk about them helping you.
Yeah, because, you know, I think that my books are always, I always write about where I'm at the time. So it could be a travel. Even if I'm reminiscing, it's reminiscing from now. So it's always like a part of my life, and I've always included my daughters on everything. And I think, you know, like when I wrote Apples for Jam, it was at the time where I was cooking these things for them, and I found my inspiration, and it was lovely to be able to give it to other people. And some people have written to me and said, you know, I have brought my children up on your recipe, and now they're also, you know, older. And so that's incredible, don't you think?
Oh, it is. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary to have that for yourself and to know that you've participated in their family life and in their cooking and their providing and their nourishing of their children. Like, it is kind of big. It's epic, I think, that you can play.
I think it is big. And, you know, whenever I write a recipe, I think I remember that. I remember that people are going to, in some cases, go out, buy the ingredients, maybe even invite people for dinner. And, you know, you forget when you're writing a book and you're in this capsule of doing something, you forget what it's actually about. I always think, for me, my brief to myself is the first copy is for me. And that helps me tremendously. Because it's like, how do I want to see it and how do I want to find it on the page? So with the editor, he would be saying to me, like, 5 tomatoes, 580 grams. And he said, can we get rid of the 580 grams because of the space issue and all that? And I said, no. Like, because today the tomatoes were 580 grams that I used, and maybe, you know, tomorrow they'd be 1 kilo. So I want it as a reference for myself. So I put these little notes in for myself so that I can make these recipes again in 10 years' time and for the photographs as a memory.
Yeah, and I love that you're strong about that because, you know, that you have to get that recipe the right way as well. And you know it works that way as well. So that's kind of quite vital. But I love the strength in that.
The things which I found strict, which might, you know, then the editor will bring his insight into it and say, oh, okay, let's do that. But then I think that we need another word. And let's cut a word out over there because, you know, there's all these different things like ragging and the page has to look good. So the editor is brilliant in that way. And if you can work with a brilliant editor that you get on well with, which in my case was on this book, Simon, also Australian. You see, I've got like a magnet. Australian Simon, who actually was, he's English, so but he's now living in Australia. It's just like a great fit. You know, you want somebody to be able to understand and you have to understand what they're saying because that is their work. That is what they bring to it, and they know, and their professionalism and expertise on everything. But to be able to work with somebody on that is also just like, you know, it's wonderful to be given that chance.
Tessa, can you read from your book today? Would you mind reading something beautiful? I don't know. You pick.
Okay. Well, I think, seeing as though you love the Italy.
Let's do it for Italy.
Let's go with that.
Yes.
How long do you want me to read for? Well, you just stop me. So whenever I am away from Italy, I miss the markets, collecting all the smells and inspiration of roasting chicken, coffee, wine, garlic, bay leaves, cardoons, quinces, olives, fresh plums, and bringing them home, and the smells of fresh air and forest where I live. The elegance of Italian grandmothers, the Italian men with their strong colour combinations and hands waving in the air in explanatory gestures, the certainty of the sounds in Italy, spoons clinking loudly against the plates in bars, especially in the mornings, the gurgling of the milk frothing and the sound of the barista banging out the used coffee grounds, the echoes of greetings in the piazzas, church bells and woman whispering in church, and the sounds of the swallows in our courtyard. My favourite time in Italy is April, May, the first flowers that start showing up on a bronze countryside, washed sheets drying in our garden, the magnolia flowers that appear just before Easter, the white sprinkle of buds that decorate the hedges in the countryside, and the wildflowers, the hint of what will slowly unfold in front of us over the next couple of months, tumbling into abundance. I also do love the time of slowing down, the restraint and stepping back of it all. Persimmon or khaki trees and chestnuts roasting autumn, and the wicker trees when they have lost their leaves in winter. These are the things that make me happy here. The loyalty in ingredients and the times to be eaten, the way they are rooted in tradition, in family, in ritual, and the commitment they have here to carry the ingredients to the markets and homes in such a beautiful way is forever inspiring.
That was beautiful.
That's my Italian chapter. Do you want more? Do you want New Orleans?
Oh, you know what? I don't want to spoil it for the readers, but your New Orleans, the beginning of that chapter, is quite funny. Is that the one with the...
It is funny.
Yeah.
I had an interview the other day from a New Orleans woman, and she just said that she's never heard anything like it. But she also said to me, don't spoil it for the readers.
Oh, there you go.
Let me do a little thing from New Orleans. From home, I could see the river from the balcony. I fell asleep to the tune still rolling around in my head. I dreamt of yellow moons and gumbo, southern greens, pecans and magnolia trees, and the deep, dark mud pie we ate one night on the Mississippi. The air was thick and heaving with humidity, storms and melody, a cooking pot of everything from refined classic French techniques to large steaming pots of Welele pot flow, Italian deli sandwiches and deep-fried soft-shell crab and shrimp, chocolate chip cookies, half and half, and crystal hot sauce. We had lunch one day at a beautiful restaurant with red and white checked tablecloths, covered with paper. Everyone was eating crab and throwing the shells onto a pile on the floor, even me. Okay, so that is a small extract from my New Orleans chapter. So you know, every place deserves its own setting and its own mood and everything. And that's exactly what makes a place, isn't it? You cannot compare New Orleans or Mexico with Rosa to Italy. Everything is just so different and so special.
It's a real celebration, your book. Tessa, congratulations on a beautiful publication. Thank you for today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.